Okay, thank you very much. I'd like first to thank both Mohammad and Roger for giving me this opportunity to present our work here. So my talk is about quasi-minimal localization. It is, let's say, some sort of localization, or let's say minimal localization, which is not definitely giving you a localized face forever, and eventually it will diminish. But I mean, the time, the relaxation time to lose the information is very large, or it will be, it will grow as an exponential of the size of system, and this is called, let's say, quasi many-body localization. And the main idea of my presentation is that here we do not need disorder in the system to have localization. It is a system which has translational invariance, and we will get, let's say, localization. This is, let's say, the topic of my talk. So to tell you about this issue, I would say that this is an interplay of thermalization and localization. I mean, generally we have thermalization in system, and in quantum systems we call it, in some sense, eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. And in some cases we know that this hypothesis is broken down, and we don't have this, let's say, ergodicity in the system. And as an example of this failure of ETH is many-body localization, which I will review very shortly in this area, and then tell you a few examples which has been introduced recently for having many-body localization in a translationally invariant model. And then I will introduce what we proposed here. This is on toric code, and everybody, I guess, knows toric code, but this is toric code on ladder geometry. And then the issue which gives us glassy dynamics, let's say this long time dynamics, which is due to anionic statistics. So everybody knows diffusion. Diffusion, we have experienced in everyday, everyday life, like milk in coffee, ink in a bottle of water, and so on. So after a while, the ink will be diffused into the whole of system, and the system will be thermalized in some sense. It has a, let's say, equilibrium state where every point is almost the same. They are very equally weighted. But at the beginning, if you look here, we have a drop of ink, and this drop may have some information. But after a while, the information will be distributed in the whole system, and we do not get the same amount of information from this system. So in the classical part, I would say in thermodynamics, we know a system, a classical system, having contact with the reservoir, they will exchange energy, particle, and after a while, the system will be thermalized to this reservoir. And this thermalized phase will be described by some thermodynamic quantities like pressure, temperature, and so on. So now the question is that, is it the case also for a quantum system? Or is it necessary that a quantum system should be in contact with the reservoir to have a thermalized phase? So the answer to this question is no. And the reason is that, suppose that a system has been already initialized in a state, which is described by this density matrix. So we know the time evolution of a density matrix. So this time evolution is unitary. And you may say that, okay, we have a unitary time evolution, so we do not lose any type of information. So everything contradicts, let's say, the thermalization of the system, because the information which has been stored in the initial state will remain there. However, since in a quantum system, we, in most cases, let's say, we are interested in part of the system, then a subsystem of the whole system, which will be explained in the next slide, I would say, is very important. And then this is the question, that if the subsystem of the system, of the whole system, could retain the whole information which has been initially stored in it? Now, this is, let's say, the case for a quantum system. Suppose that we start from a system and which has been initialized with this pure state. And for this system, if we measure an observable, for instance, it picks the value of 1. Okay. This has some information, because the value of observable one is observable A is 1 here. But look here, this part of system is important for me, not the whole system, because so this is a big system. Now, suppose that we have this global unitary dynamics, which comes from Schrödinger equation. Then after a while, because of entanglement in the system, if we again measure this subsystem and the observable, then it will be distributed in different values. So it means that the initial information which has been stored here has been lost. So this is the meaning of, let's say, losing information in a quantum system, which does not need a reservoir in some sense. Any system on itself, when we look at part of the system as a subsystem, we lose the information because of the presence of entanglement. I would say here, the whole information which has been stored in the system, in the whole system, will remain the same. But for this subsystem, we will lose the information. So to say few words concretely about eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. Look, that here psi naught is the initial state of the system, which is driven by this operator to have a time evolution to psi of t. And now the question is that, does the system reach thermal equilibrium? Any initial state can be expanded in the eigenstate of the Hamiltonian, and the time evolution of an observable like this one can be expressed in this way. And finally, after a long time, which we measure, I mean, the measurement is, let's say, after a while, after a long time, will be this value. And the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis is that if this value, let's say this long time average of this value, is equal to the ensemble average of the same operator, but at a very specific energy of the system. It means that, for instance, if we have this long term close to the ensemble average of let's say the same operator close to very specific energy, then we get eigenstate thermalization hypothesis, or ETH. So now the question is that if for any system we will get ETH, or we will lose, or let's say we may get the breakdown of ETH. We know a couple of examples in this respect. One of the known examples is the case of integrable systems. When a system is integrable, then having the initial state, the final state is definitely known. So we will not have any diffusion in the system. There is no diffusion in the system. The trajectory is completely fixed. Actually, here I plotted the trajectory. It is like a classical, let's say, picture, but it's the same even for, let's say, a quantum system, if you would like to imagine. So this is more or less known. But let's say the example which has been interested for people during the last 10 or, let's say, 15 years is the many-body localization, where the ergodicity breaking takes place. And the very well-known example of that, this Anderson localization, which is a single particle picture, or let's say this is for a single particle system. And the for a many-body system, this is MBL. And if we have an MBL phase, then we will have the breaking of ergodicity, or ETH, or eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. Another example is that the phase which is called time crystals. This is a phase where the Hamiltonian is a periodic one, but the observable of the system does not have the same periodicity of the Hamiltonian or the driving force. I mean, to have a periodic Hamiltonian, you may have a driving force to the system, which drives it with period of t. But when you measure the observables, it will not have the same periodicity as the initial, let's say, period of the system. It can be 2 times the periodicity, or 3 times, or anything else. There are examples of that. This is also another example of ETH breakdown. So let me tell you a few words about Anderson localization. This has been introduced 60 years ago by Philip Anderson. And this is a very simple model where we have a hopping in the system with disorder on on-site inertias. So one would expect that since there is a hopping here, then we should always have, let's say, a conductivity in the system, because the particle, I mean, the single particle, can hop on different sites and going from one side of the system to the other side of the system. But if the amount of, let's say, on-site energy, which comes from a distribution, is more than some critical value, let's say this W is more than a critical value, then the particle cannot move. It will localize at some part of the system, and the conductivity will be zero. So this is known, and people have also people did some experiment on this model, like this rubidium in a cold atom experiment, where they observed, let's say, this exponential decay of the wave function. This is a log plot, and since this log plot is linear, it is exponential for the wave function, which means that the wave function has been localized at some part of the system, and there is no conductivity in the model. I mean, in the seminal work of Anderson, where he says about this work, one of the statements that he mentioned, that this picture of, let's say, Anderson, let's say this single particle picture, might be an oversimplification for, let's say, studying thermodynamics of a system. And it would be more interesting to look on many-body systems, where there are different particles in the system, and this may change the story. So this had been introduced 60 years ago, and I would say up to 2003, where the work by Vasco, Alainer, and Altshuler did some calculation on the conductivity for a many-particle system. This has not been known. I mean, people didn't know, in some sense, about many-body localization. And after that, I mean, different approaches have started in this direction. So to give you a flavor, what many-body localization means, again, we have the same system, but here we have several particles, not just one particle. So the particles interact with each other. So the interaction is important here. In the previous slide, which I showed you single particle Anderson localization, the localization was in the real space. I mean, the electron, for instance, would be localized at some part in the system in the real space, and it will not diffuse anywhere. But here, what we mean by many-body localization is a localization in the Hilbert space. So these are eigenstates of the system, for instance. And if the interaction gives you a flavor that you can mix, in some sense, all of them together, or can move from one part to other part and have a link between different configuration of the system, then the system will not be localized. But if the situation is like that, if you start at this point from this eigenstate of the system and let the system to evolve, and it will stay forever around this area and never gets this area, for instance, then it will be many-body localized. So many-body localization means that we have a localization in the Hilbert space. This is also an example of many-body localization. Again, the same model, which we had in single particle Anderson localization. And here the interaction turns on and finally leads to many-body localization. And here I would say the difference between many-body and Anderson localization is that here we have localization in Hilbert space, here in real space. Here the randomness was on on-site energy. Here the randomness is on the, let's say, interaction, which in some sense is on the Hartree-Fock energy. And here, the term which would like to forbid localization is hopping. I mean, this is the term which would like to have running on the particle is hopping. But here is interaction, which couples different part of, let's say, the Hilbert space to each other. Again, to say a few words about MBL, is like that. Suppose that we have a Fermi liquid theory. In a Fermi liquid theory, or let's suppose first we have a, let's say, single particle, a free particle, okay? Then we know how to solve it because it's just a single particle. But when these particles, suppose that there are electrons, interact with each other, then it's very difficult to solve it. But we know that there is a theory which says that one can look at this low energy spectrum of interacting system by some theory which says that this eigenstates of the interacting system has a one-to-one corresponding to the eigenstates of the non-interacting system. This is, let's say, Fermi liquid theory. And now I would like to make this connection between Anderson localization and many-body localization. In Anderson localization, it's like that we have localized state for one particle. So we have this occupation at this point. But in many-body localization, it is an emergent of a local conserved quantity, not conserved, yeah, a quasi-local, let's say, quasi-local conserved quantity, very similar to Fermi liquid theory, which finally tell you that the system will stay at some part of the Hilbert space, and this, let's say, different configuration of the Hilbert space does not mix with each other. So one of, let's say, the interesting property of an NBL phase is that we can store information in it. And this is interesting for us because it can essentially be used in quantum computation, because in quantum computation, you need to store information at quantum memory. And NBL phase is, in some sense, not very clearly, an example for this, let's say, memory. In a delocalized phase, if we start with some information in the system, after evolution, this will die and you will lose the information. But if we are in an NBL phase, then we lose some part of the information, but finally, after a long time, we still have some information in the system. Because different parts of the Hilbert space does not mix to each other, and information stays there. And let's say one of the other properties is that, let's say the signature of NBL phase is that if we calculate the entropy of the system, the entropy of the system will have a logarithmic growth, while in a thermalized phase, it will grow as an exponentially. Here we have, let's say, a growth of entropy, which is much slower than, let's say, a thermalized phase. So this is a table which tells you about the property of a thermal phase, single particle picture, which is Anderson localization, and many body localized phase. So let me tell you, let's say, the important ones is this one. Suppose we have a system and a subsystem. And if we calculate the entropy of the system, the subsystem, where L is the dimension of the subsystem, for a thermalized phase, this entropy would have volume law, but for a single particle and many body localized phase, we have an area law. So these are signature of, let's say, the NBL phase. And also, let's say, this logarithmic growth of entropy, and at the same time, violation of ETH and so on. So far, what has been introduced in the literature, let's say most of, let's say, the articles in the literature, which discuss NBL phase, they have interaction and disorder. So if there is no interaction, this is single particle, not many body. And to have localization in most models, people should have some disorder in the system to impose this localization. Now, the question is that can NBL phase appear in a translationally invariant system? It means that without disorder, could we have this one? The answer is yes. There are a couple of examples. One of them has been introduced by this work by Yao, and this is actually a two-leg ladder which has been introduced. But let me tell you a more simple example here. This is 1D Polyakov-Kimball Hamiltonian. Here we have two types of particles, a massive particle which are called B, and light particles which are called which has been introduced here by Blue. So the Hamiltonian has two terms, the hopping of heavy particles and this Blue, the hopping of light particles. Just for the moment, suppose that this term does not exist. So both particles are in movement. If we leave the system to evolve, then it finally leads to a thermalized phase. But now look that if the hopping of the light particle is connected to the position of the heavy particles here, then we may trap the light particles between the heavy ones, and then the light particle will be localized between heavy particles. Whenever a heavy particle exists, then this would be 1, and this is 0. It means that the hopping of light particle here is 0. And again, the hopping would be 0.
Sorry? You mentioned before that you're talking about localization in the Hilbert space rather than on real space.
Right.
But now the picture that you're giving seems to suggest the opposite, that you're looking at on many-body localization in real space.
But this is also in Fock space.
Okay.
And this is let's say a very simple intuitive picture which tells you that if you have two types of particle, a heavy and a light particle, and the dynamics of the light particle is connected to the heavy particles, one can control, let's say, the dynamic by the hopping of the heavy particles. Here, whenever lambda is much smaller than J, because this is the hopping of the heavy particle, and this is effectively the hopping, not effectively, I mean, in some sense, the hopping of the light particle, then they will be trapped in between. So this is an example which has been discussed, let's say, in this article. The other thing which is important here is the protection of topological order. Is it possible to have it in such system? It means that in the absence of disorder. So I would say the answer to this question is also yes, and I will tell you a little bit at the end of my talk. Another example for disorder-free localization is given by Smith in this work, where they have 2 degrees of freedom. One is, let's say, fermions, these circles, and the other one is spins, these arrows, and they are coupled within this Hamiltonian. And what is happening is that the configuration of the spins will behave like disorder for the fermions. Different configuration of spins. Suppose that these are spin 1/2 and we have n spin, then the number of this configuration is 2 to the power of n. So there are lots of, let's say, configuration. And the effective theory, let's say, of this one would be something like this one. So these are a lot of, let's say, calculation. I give you, let's say, the main picture. And see, you see the hopping of the fermions, but with on-site energy. This on-site energy is related to Qj. Qj comes from, let's say, this configuration of spins. And one can calculate Qj for any of these configuration. And this tells you that the time evolution, when h is greater than some value, I mean, in the initial model, h over j is greater than some value. I mean, the information will be stay there, but in some cases when it is small, then the information will be lost. And if you calculate, let's say, the distribution of the eigenenergies, then for this case, for the case where H is greater than some value, let's say in the MBL phase, then we will have a Poisson distribution for these eigenstates. The mean levels,
The spins, they don't interact among them?
Sorry?
The spins, they don't interact?
No, I mean, this is just here. The spin are interacting just with fermions. The spin only interacts with fermions.
Ah, okay, I see.
So this is the Hamiltonian. The spin interact with each other, the fermion interact with spins.
So why the spins are not ordered?
Are not ordered?
Why they are random?
Okay, let me tell you in this way. So here, this is the Hamiltonian, okay? We are not interested to look on the ground state property. We are interested on the time evolution of the Hamiltonian, or the dynamics in the system. We start with an initial state, for instance, this psi naught, which is a product of spin and fermion part. And you may start from, let's say, a completely factorized spin configuration. Okay, you may consider that this is an ordered one. But within the time evolution, when time goes on, then, I mean, effectively the system traces all the configuration of the spins. And this is a resemblance of the disorder in the system. Okay, let me go to our model. So just this slide, I introduce toric code on the ladder geometry, and then I will discuss quasi-many-body localization on this system. Okay, this is a ladder, and the blue circles show the spins which sit on this ladder. It's very similar to the toric code, which I guess many of you know. We have Plunkett operators. This is Plunkett operators, okay, BP. And we have vertex operators here, on each vertex here. So the vertex operator is a multiplication of Pauli X matrix, and the Plunkett operator is a multiplication of Pauli Z matrices. So very similar to, let's say, KTIF toric code, this model can be solved exactly. I mean, this is the reference. So this has been done by my colleague, Vahid. So it has a topological order in the grounded set with twofold degeneracy. And moreover, all, let's say, excited states will have degeneracies, but the degeneracy is even, not necessarily two, in some cases four, six, and any case. I mean, it has, all of these stuff has been discussed in this article. And again, I mean similar to the toric code, one can obtain the ground state, and the ground state of this model is that, so this is a multiplication of this Plunkett operator acting on, let's say, C of plus signs, and the plus signs means that we have the, let's say, up state of X Pauli matrices. Okay, this is our model, and now I would like to tell you the main idea which comes from our work to have many-body localization. Okay, we have this ladder, so these are vertices, I would say, these are plackets, and we know that in the grounded set of toric code, we have no excitation. The same in our model. In this ladder, we have no excitation. And the excitation comes by flipping, for instance, one spin here. And if we flip one spin here, then an electric charge will be created here, and a magnetic flux will also be created here. This is the terminology of toric code. I don't know if you are familiar with that. If not, please tell me. I mean, to explain it a little more. Okay, the excitation of the model is something like exciting one spin, which leads finally to a different sign for this vertex, and at the same time for a plucket. So we call these excitations as charge for the vertex and flux for the plockets. So if the grounded state is defined by plus sign for all plockets and plus sign for all vertices, then the excitation comes by assigning, for instance, a minus here, a minus here, two minus, three minus for each one. So the system is like that. In the grounded set, there is no electric charge. It means no excitation of the vertices. and no magnetic flux, no excitation for the plaquettes. So this is the grounded state of the system. And this is the Hamiltonian, which I explained in the previous slide. Okay, this is the grounded state. No charge and no flux. By charge and flux, again, I will repeat that these are excitation of the system. And when we come to the higher excited state of the system, we will have charge and fluxes. So it is in the middle of the spectrum, for instance, there are lots of charges and lots of fluxes, but not full. The highest excited state of the system, let's say the top state of the spectrum, consists of all charges and all magnetic fluxes. So it can be solved exactly. So it's not very difficult. So the story is that when a charge moves in the system, it has to move around magnetic fluxes. There is no way. And at the same time, we know that the excitation of this model, because of anionic statistics, is different from being bosons and or fermions. All charges have the statistics with each other as bosons. All fluxes have the statistics as bosons again with each other. But when a charge moves around the flux, it behaves like a fermion. It gets a minus sign in the wave function, okay? And this minus sign here could lead to suppression of movement of this hopping. So this can be shown, let's say, in the effective theory, which is obtained here. Let me just show you once more that when an electric charge would like to move in the system, it has to move around the fluxes. And this movement gives you a phase. And this phase finally leads to a disorder in the configuration of the system. So let me go further. OK. I mean, this is just a few words to say how it looks like, finally. This is the Hamiltonian, which I introduced before. This is plaquette, vertex operator. And these two terms has been added as the hopping term for the charges and the hopping term for the fluxes. Because if we do not add these two terms, the charge and flux does not move in the system. So we would like to see if there is a conduction of charge or there is a conduction of fluxes in the system. So we have this, let's say, hopping terms here. And it can be shown by a change of variables that the effective theory of this Hamiltonian would be something like this one. If you look here, you will see that, for instance, this hopping here gives a multiplication of something else, which is, let's say, the presence of two other variables, again here. I mean, the hopping of charges will get 1 plus mu of g. And mu of g means that we have a plaquette here. And if this is minus 1, then this would be 0. And the hopping of charge will be suppressed. Again, there. So here, for instance, this charge would like to come here from this part to this point, and since there is a flux here, and this movement will be suppressed. And it is, in some sense, very similar to what I introduced previously in the Falikov-Kimball model, that in that model, we had two particles, a light and a heavy particle. Here, the particles are quasi-particles of the model. These are excitations of the system. And OK, this is our, let's say, setup of the system. We tune that the fluxes are being heavy and the charges are being light. So the movement of the light particle of the charges will be suppressed by the presence of a magnetic flux there. So it is a, let's say, mechanism for having this slowdown of charged particle without any explicit disorder in the system. The system is translationally invariant, but at the same time, we have, let's say, many body localization. For instance, this is for Tm equal to zero. If we put Tm to equal to zero, there is no hopping for the magnetic fluxes disturbed. Then one can explicitly show that the effective hopping of the electrons is something like this. And it clearly shows in this case that if an m is equal to one, then the hopping is zero. So now there are, let's say, our measurements data. Here, this is a measurement which measures the occupation on neighboring sites. And it shows that if two neighboring sites are being different or not. And we start from, let's say, from a configuration where at like a bond alternating, I will maybe show blackboard. So we start that we have here 1 and 0, 1, 0, something like that for the initial state, and then start to measure it. If it stays in this configuration, then we should have 1, because this is 1, this is 0, again, and so on. And then we get 1 for this delta rho. But if the configuration mix after a long time, so in average, every site may be occupied, then it will tend to 0. We will see, this is the time evolution, let's say, of this operator after with this, let's say, initial configuration. And we will see that the information starts to decrease after an initial relaxation time. And the information will be still in the system up to this effective, let's say, relaxation time. And finally, at tau r, all information has been lost in the system. However, this tau of r has a scaling with the dimension of the system here. Here, this is a log of tau. And these are different values of hopping of the, let's say, heavy particle, or let's say the fluxes. And we will see by increasing the size of system, this is 12, this is 12, 15, and 18, this relaxation time is exponentially growing. So it means that for a long system, or a, let's say, thermodynamic limit of this system, we will have a very, very large relaxation time. It means that the information will be stay in the system. So the information in the system means that there is no thermalization, because in the thermalization, in the thermalized state, all this information will be mixed up, and you will not know that if this site is 1 or if this is 0. So every site will get 1 or 0. Yeah?
Are these properties stable to perturbing the model?
Sorry?
Are these properties stable to perturbations to the model?
No perturbation.
Yeah, but like, say one were to add some small perturbation to break the solubility of the model?
Okay. You mean adding a few amount of perturbation, if it will stay stable. Yeah, definitely. It should be the case. Otherwise, it does not mean that we have, let's say, this many body localized state. Because if you have, let's say, this MBL for a very specific values of the coupling constant, then it is not a generic, let's say, phase. It has to be for some values. And it is the case. For instance, here, we can show that for t m equal to 0, it is definitely the case. But no, tm is not 0. I mean, if you change tm for some values, for instance, here it is 10, 10 to the power of minus 2, 10 to the power of minus 3, and so on. In all cases, we still get the same, let's say, phase. So in this sense, yes, it is stable. Okay? Again, some plots to show that we have this MBL phase. This is the change of entropy normalized to some value. And this is the entanglement entropy of the state of system minus the initial entropy. And this S page means that the entropy of a thermalized phase. And if the system goes to thermalization finally after a long time, then the denominator and denominator would be the same. So this value would be equal to 1. So in the thermalized phase, this value will be equal to 1. But if this is different from, let's say, the thermalized one, then it will be different from 1. And for instance, in our case, if it is close to 0, then we have, let's say, some information in this system. And OK, again, for some coupling constant of the model, and this is delta S, and different size of the system. And this shows that we are in a thermalized phase. And for these values, we are in thermalized phase because this is close to 1. And OK, we will see that if the number of fluxes in the system, the number of heavy particles in the system, is increased, then this value will drop. So this is thermalized phase, and this is not. It explicitly shows that the number of fluxes in the system is very important to have this MBL phase. Or in other words, it's more favorable for the initial information to be encoded in the subspace with higher density of errors. By errors, I mean the number of fluxes in the system. Because, I mean, usually we say that the ground reserve system is ordered. But if you excite the system and adding some perturbation to the system, then the system will be disordered, or you have added some errors to the system.
Is something that's explicitly specified in the initial conditions?
No. Actually, since you start with an initial state, then the time evolution will move in the Hilbert space of the system. Okay? If it moves in the middle, let's say, spectrum of the system, then here there are lots of fluxes. If it goes to the highest one, then this is full of fluxes. And this is the trajectory of the system. So we cannot fix it where is it. It goes through different trajectories of the system. But I mean, here, I mean, in this example, we fix it. But generally, no. OK, these are also some other plots. Again, here for different JMs. Here we don't have MBL. This is thermalized phase, but this is thermalized. This is, let's say, MBL. And again, the information which has been stored in the plockets shows that in an MBL phase, the information is robust and stays there. But in other phases, they will be disappeared after a long time. And this is also a measurement of the entropy. Here, in our ladder, we make a cut here in the half of ladder, and then calculate the entropy for the half part of the ladder. So this is the entropy for half part of the ladder. And we will see that for this, for instance, these two plots, which correspond to the thermalized phase, the entropy grows linearly with the size of system. Since it is a quasi one-dimensional system, linear growth means volume law. However, for the MBL phase, we observe that it is almost constant. It means that even by increasing the size of system, the entropy stays fixed. It is area law, because dimension is 1, that 1 minus 1 is 0, so it is constant.
So I don't understand. So the total system size is fixed, but the bipartition moves.
No, no. I mean, the total is these values, okay, 12, 15, and 18, the total size of the system, okay? But we cut it at half.
So what's this plot here? Why does it go up to 21?
Okay. Actually, so this is not 21, actually, I would say. This starts from 1, and this is 20.
That looks to me you have a 20 site system, and you're increasing the subregion size from 1. That's why it's
okay.
To 20, right?
Right. I mean, it's symmetric at this point. Yeah, it's just symmetric at this point, right. I mean, it's not the size of that. It is symmetric. Because, I mean, it's, let's say, theoretically known that for any subsystem, if you calculate, let's say, the entanglement entropy, then one can show that this symmetry always exists in any system, I would say.
So if you go back one plot, or one slide. So on the plot on the right here, what's the total system size, and what's the significance of 6?
This is the number of fluxes of the system, because it has 18 sites in the system, then this is the maximum number of fluxes of the system.
The location of the magnetic system is important. Is the location important?
No. Actually, when we say, for instance, there is one flux in the system, this one flux could be anywhere, because we can have, let's say, just suppose that we have, this is the ladder. Okay, suppose that the flux is here. This could be anywhere, and almost all these configurations are very close in energy. So in some sense, the system, when traces due to time evolution, goes through all of these states.
If you have two, then the other one can be anywhere.
Yeah, here. These two could be close to each other, and so on. All of them has been considered in the Hilbert space. Okay, this is my last plot. In the last plot, I will show this correlation function. This is again the correlation function of the occupation of, let's say, two plackets at p and p plus 1, means that at two different positions, but means at, for instance, this one, this is p, and this is p plus 1, and these two. So this is a correlation of fluxes. And it has been done for two different cases. I mean, the coupling constant in this case correspond to MBL phase, and the coupling constant for this case correspond to thermalized phase. So let's start with the thermalized one. Okay, this is an energy, and this state where this correlation has been calculated is close to some fixed value of energy, and very let's say, little deviation from this fixed value. So this was what I explained at the beginning, that the long time average of the, let's say, expectation value should be equal to the ensemble average of the state close to that energy. So this is the ensemble average close to a specific energy. And we will see that for any, let's say, deviation from that fixed value, almost we get a fixed, let's say, result. However, in the MBL phase, we get different values. So this is a violation of ETH. I mean, it's an explicit, let's say, representation where ETH has been violated. So it means that the long-term average of the system is not equal to the ensemble average. And at the same time, if we look at the density of state and the, let's say, distribution of G, here we see that by increasing the number of the size of system, it's going to be a Gaussian close to its average value. But here, it's not clear that distribution is being close to its average. So it's a spread distribution. Okay. This is a summary, which maybe I do not bother you to tell all the things, just maybe the important ones, that here the disorder, or let's say the effect of disorder in an MBL system has been retrieved by the braiding statistics of anions of the system. And at the same time, we have a more stable state for storing the information in the highest value of energy, in the higher excited state of the system. Okay, maybe I have to thank my collaborators, Abul Hassan from Stanford and Hadi, my PhD students, especially Hadi, because most part of the work has been done by Hadi, and thank you for your attention. I hope I'm the right time, maybe a little more.
Questions?
I just have a small question. So the key ingredient in here is that you put some kinetic term for the excitations.
Right.
The Kita model, right, on this ladder geometry. Isn't that reminiscent of the fact that there's already disorder in the system, in the sense that if you have the system with the just Kita F Hamiltonian on the ladder geometry, and then you let that evolve, that doesn't have a kinetic term for the excitations.
Right.
But if you put it by hand, isn't there a physical motivation behind it? Like in the sense that you might have disorder in the system that promotes the movement of these excitations through
okay.
it?
Okay, but by disorder, if you mean that this is something as, I don't know, probably you ask, it is a perturbation to the system in some sense, but not disorder, because it is the same for any site of the system.
Okay.
The Hamiltonian is translationally invariant. Okay, no disorder in the real space. Because in the other models which has been discussed, MBL, the disorder exists in the real space.
Okay. So that this dynamically broken translational symmetries due to the anionic statistics of this.
Right.
So is this mechanism sort of exclusive to one dimension?
No, I mean, we think that it has to work in two dimension even, but I mean, calculation in two dimension is really tough. I mean, to have a two-dimensional system and giving the dynamic to the system, because we have to look in the long time average of the observers. So long time means that you have to solve the Hamiltonian exactly to find the eigenvalues and eigenstates. But I mean, the mechanism can be intuitively, let's say, explained for also higher dimension, like two or maybe three. But two, I think, is really easy, I mean, to show.
Some kind of disorder to the system. It is possible to change this quasi many body localized to real many body localized.
Good question. Actually, you mean that we add something else? I mean, then finally get a very robust even at infinite time. Yeah? No, I don't know, actually. I did not think about it before. But I would say, in principle, it should be the case, because there are also other examples. And our model has, let's say, the main ingredient of many others, like hopping. So then it means that if you add, for instance, the disorder into the interaction of the system, then I guess it could be the case. But actually, I don't know the exact answer to your question.
Thank you.
If you add disorder, then you can break the translation.
Yeah, that's the case. But his question is that if we add, then do we get true MBL? Because in our model, it is quasi-MBL, because the information eventually diminishes. It does not stay forever there.
Which may be very stupid. So why do you care about not having disorder?
Actually, we were interested, I mean, to answer this question, that is disorder necessary for an MBL phase or not? So we proposed a mechanism to have MBL or quasi-MBL without disorder. This was important for us, because there are lots of examples for MBL with disorder.
Numerics, evidence for 2D toric codes. If you add actual disorder, you get localization effects. I don't remember the names of all the people who've done it, but you might want to look up names like Robert Koenig, and I think it's James Wooten. So if you look those up on the preprint server, you'll find them and their collaborators. There are about at least half a dozen of them. I don't remember all their names.
Okay.
Anyway.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, let's thank Abdullah again.
Thank you.